my head didn't consider brain tumor. It didn't even consider brain cancer. I just was like, something's wrong. And that was so out of left of field, having a brain tumor or having brain cancer. Like, that didn't even enter my mind. Because at this stage, I was still having seizures and I just wanted them to stop.
That's Harry Malcolm. He was just an easygoing bloke cruising along in life when out of nowhere, he had a seizure at work. From then on, Harry endured seizure after seizure, with the culprit soon revealed as a brain tumour the size of a golf ball. Fortunately, the surgery to remove the tumour was a success, but Harry now has to live with the fact it could and probably will return. In the face of this frightening possibility, Harry's making the most of each day and staying positive. He's also going above and beyond to help others as an ambassador for New South Wales Cancer Treatment Centre, Chris O'Brien Lifehouse. Welcome to Young Blood, the award-winning volunteer podcast dedicated to young men's mental health. My name's Callum McPherson, I'm a journalist, and this is a platform for everyday men to share lived experience stories and show that no matter what you're going through, you're not alone. Suicide is the number one killer of young people, and changing that starts with speaking up. So let's do it. The Young Blood Men's Mental Health Podcast is a volunteer community service, and we rely on community support to bring this show to you. This episode is sponsored by Ski for Life, a charity committed to promoting well-being and suicide prevention. They've been running their annual ski relay on South Australia's Murray River for more than a decade, raising money to support community mental health initiatives. You can find out more about their cause at skiforlife.com.au.
Trigger warning, if you find anything spoken about in today's episode distressing, please contact Lifeline on 13 11 14.
So Harry, what kind of life were you living before the brain tumour?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't want to throw around the term normal, but I left school. I was probably 3 years out of school and just still find my feet of what I want to do career-wise, how I want to get there. At the same time, you know, want to enjoy myself, you know, being late teens to early 20s, keeping fit, trying new things. So yeah, I guess that stage I was quite free-spirited and sort of trying to find myself as a young man.
And how would the people close to you describe you back then? How do you hope they would describe you?
Well, yeah, that's right. How do I hope? I think a good laugh. I always want to make people laugh, or just anyway, like any day. Even if it's my boss, my neighbour, friends, I always like people enjoying themselves, having a good time, but also hard worker as well, I think. I was very work-driven, which was a blessing and a curse at some stages too. Bit of a clown, but likes to work.
So you're pretty easygoing dude, just sort of starting out in life. And what was your outlook before you had the diagnosis? Because you know, you're cruising along, life's going well. We all think, well, I'm going to have 70 years in front of me here to do whatever I want. And no one expects something to suddenly come up like a brain tumour, or to come to that fork in the road out of nowhere. So I suppose, what was your outlook before you knew any of this was coming?
I like to think I still had a great sense of gratitude and life, and, you know, because my upbringing was, you know, had a few other interesting moments growing up. So I always had a great sense of gratitude and grateful for every day, I think. But before, I think it was more like, I'm 20. I can do a few things and get away with it. And I was sort of pushing that limit physically, mentally, socially, any way I could find.
Because that's the time where we're really feeling invincible.
That's right.
The brain development hasn't caught up yet, but the body's there and the freedom's there, and it's just time to crack into it, whatever that is, and make mistakes and do whatever.
A young boy in a man's body, I guess.
Yeah.
I just was, So outlook was invincible, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So what were some of those things that you mentioned from your childhood? Is that some mental health related stuff?
Yes and no. I think growing up, I learned at a definitely young age that majority of your life is under, you know, controlled by circumstance. And that after that, it's how you control your decisions based on that. I was very young when my mother and father divorced. So at that age, I was thinking I was like 3 or 4. At that age, I didn't know any better. So that was my normal. But I had older siblings. So seeing them react and adapt differently made me question how I should, you know, react. And then, you know, chopping, changing different schools, moving around. Yeah, a lot of time spent with my mum, more so than my dad. And that was just my, that's, yeah, out of my control. At that age, you're any child, you just go with what you've is in front of you. And then that, I carried that through to, you know, as a teenager as well.
Yeah, so you had that attitude from a young age that you control what you can control, and yeah, some of your life's to a large part environmental, but you still choose how you respond to certain situations, and that is one thing that you have control over, we all do. So take us through that first seizure that you had.
So I was on a work site, normal. I was actually working for my uncle's company, and I was working with my brother. So two men in my life that I look up as idols. And my brother and I just had smoko. It was very normal, relaxed, like a conversation like this. And then I was off to do a job. I remember I had to do this task and I just collapsed. My head went back. It was like someone was behind me pulling my head back. I had no, like, talk about having no control. I just had no control over my body whatsoever. And my jaw dropped. And I just remember waking up in agony, both of my shoulders. My left one popped out. The right one popped out but was fractured. I didn't know at the time, but...
And I was shaking so violently.
I was shaking so violently, yeah. And I fell, and how I fell, I was sort of stuck between pallets. I only later found out that description because my brother told me, but I was sort of dismantled out from a few pallets. And the first people I look up to was my uncle was there and my brother were there. And I was just sort of stunned. And it was one of those moments where I felt pain. Didn't know what was happening, but you can read what people are looking at you. They're looking at you in shock, and I saw that shock. So I knew something wasn't good, but I didn't know what it was. So then I started to go through shock.
So no symptoms at all leading up to the seizure, like nothing that seemed to be out of the ordinary. It was just bang.
Yeah, yeah. There was no headaches, no sort of spasms in the body, or no... at a normal stuff. So just happened very quickly.
What was it like to get back on your feet after that and look around and just be like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, paramedics were there and you just listen to them. Yeah, you get on the bed, do that, and you're just being told what to do. And that they know what, you know, could have happened. And I just had to follow the lead. I was just out of control. I was like a little kid again, like, okay, whatever you... say I'll do. And then went to hospital and came back that night and had another seizure as well. That time that was more scary because I said goodnight to my mum and I was in my bed, and then my mum came again and I was having a seizure. So then we had to go to another hospital. So that same thing, I saw my mother with that shock in her eyes, and I was going through, you never want to see people you love and respect in your life feel pain or shock. And I saw that and I just, yeah, felt awful.
Yeah, and you never want to have no idea what the hell's happening to your body and your mind.
Yeah, I mean, before the seizures, usually if something went wrong, I would try to make people laugh and I was in control of the reading the room and go, well, at least we have this or this or... But this scenario, I couldn't give anything. I had no idea and they had no idea. And it was just one of those moments where we're clueless, but we're in shock.
So the doctors, after the first seizure and you went to hospital, what did they tell you it was? They obviously said you've had a seizure, but they couldn't explain why that might be, or they said just monitor it?
Yeah, so the first doctors, my brother described what happened. I was shaking. And the first, I bit my tongue, I had a black eye as well. And when you bite your tongue, that's a very clinical sign that you've had a seizure. And when your shoulders pop out too. But they said that I fainted and I fell. So they, you know, put, you know, they said, gave it all clear. that I could go back home, which we did, and then I had another seizure. And then that after that second seizure, I was driven to another hospital, another town. And they, you know, prescribed me, had a seizure in the waiting room. And then they said, yeah, this is serious.
What were you going through in your mind when it was seizure after seizure, all in quick succession? Because I'm guessing you would have had that first seizure being like, that was terrible. I got no idea what that was about, but just really hoping it was some random thing and I'm okay. And then bang, 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 it keeps happening. That must have been just terrifying for you.
I think the first sort of thought was, I was exhausted. I was actually exhausted because your body produces so much energy when you're having seizures, and it's like they're all tense. And then when you stopped, it's like my body's knackered. I feel like I've played two games of footy. So I don't know. It's just looking back in hindsight, I was just probably making sure everyone else was okay, and I was just very not short with people, just saying yes to the paramedics or the nurses. But after that first seizure, I just sort of brushed it off ignorantly, I guess. I went to bed, and if I didn't have another seizure, I would have looked into it the next week. But yeah, it was, yeah.
Well, by the time you've had that third one and you're in the waiting room, did your mind start to think about what this might be? Because obviously something was seriously wrong, or were you not letting yourself go there yet?
To be honest, my head didn't consider brain tumor. It didn't even consider brain cancer. I just was like, something's wrong. And that was so out of left of field, having a brain tumor or having brain cancer. Like, that didn't even enter my mind. Because at this stage, I was still having seizures and I just wanted them to stop. And my shoulders were still in pain too. So they were, the right one was still out for quite some time. So,
yeah, must have freaked your mum out.
Yeah, it did. It did. She saw two, but she came back with me to the Campbelltown Hospital. And I remember I was speaking to her and then my mouth dropped again and I couldn't speak. And then I can't remember what happened, but yeah, my mum was there. That's just, I felt really bad for her seeing two of them.
I haven't seen someone have a seizure, but I just imagine that would be so scary because you got no control whatsoever over that situation.
Yeah.
And also, it's not like you had diagnosed epilepsy or something where you have an understanding of why it's happening. Your mum's seeing this happen, and yesterday you were totally fine, and then next minute, this is happening again and again. Must have been so freaky. Take us through the process of getting diagnosed.
The doctors had to do a few things. They had to fix my shoulders, put me into a CT scan for my head, and then that's when they found the tumour. And that stage, when they find a mass in the brain, they say, okay, this is what's definitely causing the seizures. To minimise the seizures, here's some medication, which they administrated to me straight away. And then they have to test what sort of tumour that is. So after the next day, I was sent back home with this medication, and its main use is for epileptic people. And it works. I'm still on it now, but the dosage was too small. So I was still, I remember how I had to sleep with my mother and my sister in a king bed just to make sure I didn't have another seizure. And I was when I was going to sleep. So it just upped the dosage and waited to get more results.
So you needed to get a biopsy done to test if it was a cancerous tumour or if it was
benign,
they knew it was cancer?
Yeah, that straight away, the brain surgeon that we saw, he said, well, this is definitely causing the seizures. We'll put you straight under the knife and we'll take the tumour out, and then with that tumour, we'll test it then. So we had to go through that process, and then they had to test that, and it came back as a rare cancer.
How did you go being told that you've got this golf-sized brain tumour?
Well, I thought I was sort of, I guess, shocked as well. But again, I think my instinct is going off how other people react as well and trying to make sure they're okay. So when that happened, my family network and everyone around me were really supportive, but I was trying to make them okay, that it was okay. So to be honest, I didn't really register the scale of how serious this was until later on.
Do you think that was maybe a bit of a defense response from you?
Yeah, definitely.
Because I think that can be typical where we might be the kind of person that deflects, and wonderful person, cares about those around us, very compassionate and caring. But when something's happening to us, by just thinking about other people, we're sort of preventing ourselves from thinking about what might happen to us. Was that what it was?
Yeah, definitely. And I think I've used that. I've carried that defense mechanism through since I was a kid. And this was just heightened to the max when this happened. Because you get home and everyone's there, they're looking at you, and they're concerned and worried and going through all these emotions. And here I am going, nah, I'm okay. Trying to crack jokes and trying to sort of break the seriousness of it. But I didn't know. I didn't know the scale of it.
And so how did it dawn on you over time?
I think when it was a slow process of, well, you can't work, you can't drive. And slowly by slowly, I was getting cut my independence. And then when after that process, when they gave me the diagnosis of what it was, and I have to go through treatment, and you can always come back. Still in that process, I was still very much, oh, it's all right, okay. Well, we'll go through treatment. We'll do checkups. We'll do rehab. Sweet, I'll just do that. This is out of my control. I'll just say yes, no, and just keep going. And then only till sort of now, to be honest, I've really come into, I don't really, I'm not really happy with this circumstance. I know it sounds funny, but only till sort of over a year afterwards, it's been like, yeah, I live with this every day and you can't get rid of it. It's always in the back of your head. It'll come back, and brain cancers take lives. That's a fact. And that's probably started to kick in probably a year afterwards.
It's important to look after our mental health just like our physical health, and AG1 is the perfect supplement to help take care of both. Just one daily scoop of AG1 covers all your nutritional bases with 75 vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, adaptogens, a greens blend, and whole food ingredients. You can count on this tasty mix to boost your energy, increase mental clarity, help you get better sleep, improve digestion, and pep up your immune system. Plus, it's super simple to make part of your morning routine, all for the price of a coffee. You may know producing this podcast is all volunteer, and I have to pay for studio time and editing to keep bringing you these episodes. Every dollar we make from this partnership will go towards helping to cover production costs, so it's an awesome way to support your health and contribute to young men's mental health all in one. If you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, AG1 is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/youngblood. That's drinkag1.com/youngblood. Check it out.
What has the timeline been from when you got diagnosed to then getting the surgery, getting it out, and then how long has it been since then?
So you're testing me here. So I think 2021, October, I had my first 3 seizures. And then 2 weeks afterwards, or 2.5 weeks afterwards, I had the brain surgery. And then, so November, maybe late November, I found out the diagnosis. And so early February 22, going through radiation. After radiation, had shoulder surgery. And through that, I had rehabs, checkups, appointments with so many specialists. And then it's been only really, the late side of last year, I really decided to, you know, it's okay, it's all good. It's just checkups now. But for some reason now, so it's been over a year, it's just like fatigue, I guess, mental fatigue.
That's a lot to go through, having all those tests and the surgery and your life suddenly becoming about you have to go to this appointment and then that appointment and all these things that you never had to think about, and then obviously stop working, and it's like your life's going this way, and then all of a sudden something that's completely out of your control goes, oh no, actually your life's not going to be like that. That's such a hard thing to be able to face up to and take on. I admire your stoic attitude in saying, well, I can't change it, so I just have to adapt and respond as best that you can. I certainly respect that, but freaky having stuff taken out of your control like that and where you're sort of at the mercy of whatever happens. Can you elaborate on sort of your day-to-day attitude towards this? Are you like, how much were you just trying to distract yourself and not think about it, or was it very much consciously saying, all right, this is happening, but I'm going to be positive about it every day and I'm just going to believe that it's going to be fine?
So I guess I'll take you back to that year of when it was radiation every day, rehab every day, and I wasn't working. So I think work, in general, work has always been you're keeping busy and you're keeping distracted, and also exercise as well, same thing. And that was my big motivation to distract myself of whatever I can't control in my life. I can control my work, how I exercise. And that was my out. And then when this happens, I can't work and I can't exercise. So I'm sort of, and I bounced to reading. I just read a lot of books and I just approached it to, I have to learn, even if it's just one word a day, or learn a fact a day. And that was my approach to coping with it. At that stage, my life was surrounded by, all right, in 2 weeks' time, I've got this appointment. Till then, I need to improve my shoulder mobility, or I want to be able to walk. So I have little goals. So I was very task orientated around my schedule. But then now afterwards, that now that I'm back at work, I'm back exercising, but then I still got this medical routine as well that I still have to consider. So I think that's why I'm going a bit fatigued, and like it slows me down a bit. I can't focus too much on work and exercise, because I know one day, it could be tomorrow, that it could come back and then it's all gone.
But you've also got to live your life, and you are living a normal life, other than having to think about this stuff in the background and go to those appointments and check in on it. You know, you are working, you can work out, you got a social life, you got a family. So that must be strange, like living the life that you would live anyway, but with this in the back of your mind. And that's gonna be tough, the not knowing about it. Almost, well, you tell me, almost harder than when you had it and you knew what was coming next. You had to get it cut out and then this and then that. Was that in a way easier than the phase you're in now, where you're sort of not sure what's going to happen?
Yeah, it definitely was easier knowing that, okay, you got a tumor, we'll get rid of it. Mm. Okay. And then you can clean your hands and that's done. But now it's like, because like when they do brain surgery, they can't get rid of all the tumor. I had the option of having the surgery awake. You can speak, and they just have to make sure if they hit a nerve, you obviously stop speaking. And I said, oh, I'll take the one where I can sleep, which they did. And so that they always had to leave a little bit of the tumor there, and that 9 times out of 10 will grow back at some stage.
And so they have to do that, because otherwise you might be brain dead?
Yeah, it's just a risk they take. Like they can't, like any other sort of, I guess, tumor, like if there was a tumor on my arm, they could just cut the arm off and be done with it. In the brain, they just have to leave a little bit there that's attached to the brain, because it's too risky to...
Because you could end up paralyzed or something.
Yeah, because these tumors grow on the central nervous system, so it's high impact when that gets damaged.
So what did they say to you in terms of the outlook and it coming back? How was that explained?
It's explained in a simple grading, basically. So how tumors are graded is basically judged on their pace on which they grow. So a grade 1 tumor is a slow growing tumor. Grade 4 would be fast growing. It's very aggressive. With this tumor, it had characteristics of a 2, but also of a 3. So they put it down the middle, which is really tricky to decipher and treat. But in my mind, it'll come back. Whether it's a slow growing tumor, which is, I guess, a bittersweet. because I can sort of live my life, but by the time I get to close to 30 or thinking about a family, I'll be a little bit hesitant because I know it'll be just around the corner because it's a slow-growing tumour. Whereas if it was aggressive, you know, that it could come back, you know, 3 months after the radiation. So I don't know what's better either. Like it's, yeah, I don't know.
So how old are you now, Harry?
About to turn 23. Okay. So 22.
Jeez, you're a young bugger. Yeah. So is it the case that if it does come back, they can operate again and do the same thing?
They can. So I've heard, yes, surgery and radiation, and they can give me chemotherapy.
Okay, so it's not like if it comes back, it's definitely going to kill you. They could remove it again and maybe the clock starts again and you might have to keep going through the same thing.
Yeah, I like that analogy, the clock starts again. I think it'll just delay a little bit with these brain tumors because the brain is such a superior organ. The tumors that develop, they form really powerful resilience. So if you treat it with radiation, it'll zap it for a little bit and then it'll learn to rebel against that treatment again. And then same with chemotherapy. So after you've done, you know, radiation and chemotherapy, I guess the third line of treatment and defense would be trials, experiments, because it'll just keep bouncing back because they're trying to fight this treatment, which is on one hand remarkable. On the other side, it's just fucking scary, if I'm honest.
Yeah, cancer's a bitch, man. There's no other way to put that. And it is just horrifying the way it can adapt. And fortunately, there's at least so much work being done and there's a huge amount of progress being made in all fields of cancer. So I suppose that you certainly can be optimistic that in that next 7 years, they'll keep coming up with developments and new treatments. There might already be drugs on the market that can be used for something, for what you've got. So at least we live in a time where there's exponential technological growth, where you've definitely got a good chance of the people who are geniuses working on this, working something out that's going to mean that you can live a long and happy life. Like that is certainly still a possibility. But like what you said there, thinking about your future and having kids and going from your 20s to your 30s, yeah, how does that impact the way that you just approach planning for your future?
So it's a battle. I'm not going to lie. Like it's on one side, it's like, all right, let's seize every day with such energy, zest. Let's make everyone laugh. Let's go really hard at work. Let's go really hard at the gym. And let's just go mental. Let's just like throw myself to all this stuff, which I have been. But then I got to like a few months in, I'm like, I'm knackered. I'm so tired. And you get reminded that this is a slow-growing tumour, so maybe I can just take it easy for a bit and just pace myself and moderate.
Yeah, so living every day like it's your last is pretty – takes it out of you.
It does. On one hand, it's really great and it's got some benefits because you gain muscle really quickly, but you just get really tired. And I found that. I found there was a little transition of, okay, I can't keep having these outs and keep throwing myself 100% because I'll shatter. And mentally I was shattering. The motivation was going. I didn't want to do it anymore because I felt I had to do it. I didn't want to do it. And realizing that was a real sort of scary thought because I just didn't want to let it go of, you know, all this stuff. But yeah, I don't know. It's scary going to my 30s.
Have you got a bucket list? Does this bring that front of mind?
I don't have a bucket list, but I do have certain goals that I want to do. And although it's great, like I might have a goal in 2 years' time to, you know, walk camels around Australia, and that's great. That's in 2 years' time. But then I got to work on that. So I'm planning to think of doing hikes, 60K in a day hikes, or, you know, this August, I'll be running every day for this charity, Go the Distance, which I can't wait for. So I'm trained for that. So little micro goals that help, they really help push me each day.
So what's it like when you wake up in the morning? Like, is your brain tumor the first thing that you think of, or are you able to not go there straight away?
I think the worst outcome is there, yeah. And I think what I've done, like in my room, of basically when you wake up and get out of bed, the first thing I look at is the mirror. Just look at myself. Just have a quick moment of, you know, if I have if I wake up with a bad thought, or just, you know, if I have overthinking cancer or overthinking certain things, I just have a look and go, just breathe, take it easy, and just get on with it. And it's just that little glance of just like, it's, you're right here. It's a reminder that you're right here. And you look at yourself and go, you're here. You've done it. You've woken up. And I'll do that again tomorrow. I keep waking up and I keep showing up. So that's really simple. I find that's something that's sort of keeping me going. The outcome of brain cancer does float in my mind occasionally.
Mm. That's a great way to go about it. I think all of us could benefit from waking up and doing that, no matter what we're going through there. It seems like you've got a really good relationship with yourself and got some good support around you as well. Like, you seem like you're able to be pretty kind to yourself, which is a bit of a skill and something that people are not necessarily born with and have to work on. But yeah, a lot of people who come on this podcast really have to battle with a negative internal dialogue and trying to recondition that and sort of battling themselves a lot of the time. And you're battling cancer, and it seems like you're on your own side, and that seems like it must be something that's really, really important when you're going through something like this.
Yeah, it is. And like, you really learn really quickly that you're by yourself. As simple as that sounds, like, you're on the radiation table by yourself, and you're there for 15, 20 minutes, and you have to be still, and you're in the MRIs for an hour, and you have to be still, and you're by yourself. And I think it's rare. I haven't mastered it. But it's rare to have moments of stillness and silence and to be comfortable in your own head and to be comfortable in your own body. And yeah, that skill's taken a while to get there. But yeah, I think it's important to remember that you're sort of, you are alone, it's definitely beneficial to have groups of friends and family to support you, for sure.
What have you found has helped you to get mastery over your own mind? Because that's got to be a big part of this battle.
I think a great deal of perspective is something like that. So knowing that I'm here today is going to carry through, you know, for the day, and then I'll wake up and go through the same thing. So I don't think I've mastered it, but having a sense of perspective creates gratitude that I'm here today and I'm doing what I can to be a better person than yesterday. And it's that simple.
Must make you laugh and cringe at some of the stupid shit that people complain about or spend all their time worrying about, when this could happen at the drop of a hat. And then, like you said, it gives you that perspective, and then every day does count, and in a positive way for you, because you've chosen to see it that way, which is, I think, how you have to approach it. But compared to stuff that you used to worry about, or you see people talking about online, or just giving so much energy to stuff that just doesn't really matter, and going through what you're going through, you find out what really matters.
Yeah, and I hate comparing myself to others. Like, if you decide to, you might be going through some issues yourself, but not cancer related, and I wouldn't want to hold that against you because my problems are bigger than yours. But it's interesting to see what people are concerned about, and some might be, you know, as little as it's the wrong fork for this meal, and for them that's a big deal, right? And I've seen and met a few people where little things like that can upset them, and that's okay, because for them it's a big deal.
It's all relative.
It's all relative. That's right. It's all relative. And for me, I'm here. I could use my hands to eat this meal. I don't care. I'm here. And that's really simple. So not that I compare, but it is interesting to see what people go through and how they deal with it, and to which scale of the scenario it is, I think is irrelevant to me, I guess, but interesting to see how they deal with it.
Do you feel like this has made you a fair bit wiser? Like, do you feel kind of wise beyond your years now because you're faced with this at such a young age?
I think so. I agree with that. I think I grew up very quickly when I was diagnosed, if that makes sense. And I was just, which is a good thing, but I'm at the same time, I'm still 22. I don't want to grow up too quickly and realize, you know, that I missed my 20s trying to do things that, you know, people should be doing when they're 50 odd.
Yeah, you got to go out there and live it, man. I think you got the right attitude and the right idea. What do you like about yourself now, the version of yourself that you are now as a man that you didn't have before?
I think that would have...
Obviously, the good looks and the baby blues have always been there.
Yeah, they have, but I don't know if you've seen photos of me before, but I had long curly hair with sidetracking and a beard that's thicker than yours.
Yeah, you've cleaned it up, mate. Cleaned up your act. That's good to see.
Yeah, so I've cleaned it up. I was bald for a bit. Not as big as Vin Diesel, but some could say. That's all right. The biggest thing for me is independence. That's something I still urged for that beforehand, but now I realize that I can do it. There's a real sense of I set something and I feel like I can do it. I can really do it. And the self-belief has boosted, especially my exercise. Before, I think I had it, but not at this level. I think self-belief has gone up, and knowing I can believe myself to do something and to really put energy in a conversation, a exercise, working, asking questions. I just have this belief that I can do it and put the full energy in it. Which I thought I had before, but not at this level.
So what do you want to do with your time, however long that time might be? I mean, we're all going to die, but what do you want to do with this life?
It's simple. I want to be happy.
Yeah, you're 22 and you should have it all worked out by now.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks. They asked me the same question when I was in primary school and high school. What do you want to do?
I want to be a fireman.
I want to be a fireman, yeah. No, as simple as that it sounds, I want to be happy. Live an honest life, simple life. But I have this great urge of adventure and wanderlust, and I want to meet more people, different cultures, different religions, travel, hike. I heard you mention, like, before, you know, we all die, and that's a given, and I've accepted that. But I had a moment, my scan this year, of what brain cancer can actually really deliver, which is obviously death is the worst outcome. But for me, it was you can have a stroke and you can suffer speech impediment, or you can, you know, have trouble walking, and then your independence goes. And then you might not remember people's names or communicate or be unable to communicate and express yourself. And for me, that terrifies me. That really terrifies me. As a 22-year-old, I'm like, I don't want to rely on others. I don't want to be a burden to others, because I hate that feeling, and I hate being a burden and feeling like a disappointment because people have to care for me and take, you know, because I can't take care of myself. So I think with that in mind, I want to be as independent without pushing too many limits, but be independent as possible and, you know, go on adventures.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. It must give you also a really deep understanding for what people go through with brain tumors who end up with paralysis or losing their speech, and then you have to live every day with that as a hurdle as well. But you can't live your life like you are now worrying about what might happen. And obviously you're in a very different situation to a lot of other people, but none of us know what's going to happen. And I think we lull ourselves into this idea of before something like what happens before we get a brain tumor or something like that, we lull ourselves into this idea of, well, I'm young. I haven't had any serious health problems. I'm going to live till I'm 100. That means I've got the next 80 years to do whatever. So, you know, there's no rush. There's no urgency. Cause me and my life continuing is a given. And actually that's not the case. Like, stuff happens randomly and human beings are extremely fragile and you don't know what's around the corner. And that can be a really destabilizing thought that really unsettles people. I think COVID made a lot of people realize that and remember that, but it's a fact of human existence and we can't be afraid of it because it's the reality. We can't change that, but we can choose how we respond and take the gratitude angle on it and use that to remind ourselves on days where things aren't going our way, but hey, it's not necessarily life or death. You know, this too shall pass. Let it go. Make the most of it. Both sides of that coin.
Yeah, exactly. And to be honest, there is days that I feel low and I'm struggling, but you do find something that you're grateful for. And it's as simple as you woke up and you did that. You've achieved that. Let's just keep achieving things like that. So, yeah, and as soon as I finished surgery and I was in hospital for, I think, 3 days or 4 days, afterwards it was amazing to see people in the street who I didn't know, people my age, people older, and just how they were walking or how they were going, you know, by themselves. And some people were just always on their phones or always. It was just interesting that my perspective grew very instantly after surgery. And I just knew that I wanted to be as physical as possible while I still have good enough health. And if that's, you know, going on hikes or swimming or going on runs or doing something crazy. I do say to my surgeons that I want to go back into boxing, which they don't really like to hear, but I would love to prove them wrong. I would love to prove myself wrong and push those limits.
Just don't get hit, man. Just work on the slipping.
Exactly.
Just the bob and weave. You'll be right.
Just the bob and weave. It's simple. It's a simple sport.
That's it. That Money Mayweather.
Yeah, that's it. Look at him. He's it's great.
Tell us about you being an ambassador.
This charity came about, you know, when we did an opening for the UCAN Centre at the Chris O'Brien Lifehouse. And I love it. It had everything that I loved, you know, being fit and physical and helping people who are in worst case scenarios than I am, but who can't get it. You can't get treatment. You can't get help. And they're isolated. And I couldn't think of anything worse than being in a circumstance where I can't get treatment. I can't get help. And for me, that was really powerful. And just take away cancer a little bit. But if you need help with anything, like as little as like mental health, you know, your sexuality, you're fighting against your religion you're growing up with, and you can't get help. Like that idea of people not being able to get help, I thought this is, I love the idea that I can try to push help towards those who are unseen and can't get help. And to do that, you know, through exercise, I think is a great, great spectrum.
So how are you doing that? What does your role involve?
So I want to obviously speak to as many people and share this, go the distance to as many people. But also when August comes, I'll be running every day. My plan is to run over 10 Ks a day, every day for that month. So
that'll be a challenge.
It'll be a challenge, but I know some runners here and there that are sort of my idols that they've done more than that a day. So I can, the human has no limitations.
So that's going to be 300 Ks.
Over 300Ks.
Nice, man. So that's happening in August.
Yeah.
So can people donate to that campaign? How's that work?
Yeah, so people can donate and they can also pick their own amount of Ks that they can do. So whether you're a walker, runner, swimmer, cyclist, you can do that and you can add the Ks and say, this is the target I want to reach in this month, and you can get donations from that.
And what's the goal?
Yeah. For me?
Yeah, and for the campaign at large.
The goal, I would love to get over half a mil.
Jeez, it's a decent whack.
Yeah. Well, you got to set the bar high. You got to aim for the stars. You might hit the treetops, but
yeah, that's right, man.
Treetops, you want to get off the ground. So, see what happens.
So, if we want to chip in for that, how can we do that?
Go to the distance, Chris O'Brien Lifehouse, and it'll go. All the steps are on the website, and you'll see my story and Aaron's story as well. And you can donate and sign up and pick your case.
Well, good on you for being that light in your own life and other people's life and making that effort, that extra effort to want to help other people. And I think that makes such a big difference to our own capacity to be able to get through life and see a situation like yours in a positive light. And I love your attitude with which you're approaching life. And I really liked the way you described how you get up in the morning, you look in yourself in the mirror and you say, I'm here now. And it's simple as that. And as long as that's the case, you just got to give it hell and do as much as you can. And I think that's such an important attitude to adopt. And I love that. I think I'll probably think about that in the coming weeks when I get up in the morning and I'll be thinking about you doing that and do it myself in my own life. I think that's, that's really important to remember, man. And it's the way you're taking it on and just being as positive as you can and you're still, you know, pumped and you've got so much ahead of you and so much to do in your life and you're just working with what you got. Yeah, people always say inspiring, but it's just strong. It's strong, man. It's great. It's great to see you taking it on like that. And should be really proud to be the young man that you are. And I certainly am optimistic and hope that you grow to be a much older man and carry this forward, bro. So thanks so much for sharing that story and being that positive light for people. Keep it rolling, man. Get as much in there as you can.
Yeah, thank you.
That's it for this episode. If you like what we're all about, support us by following Youngblood Men's Mental Health on Instagram and Youngblood Mental Health on TikTok. Every podcast episode is recorded in professional quality video and they're all up on our Youngblood Men's Mental Health YouTube channel. So please show some love and subscribe. A big thanks to our local business supporters, Pro Realty Property Consultants and Herd Financial. You can find everything there is to know about the podcast at youngbloodmensmentalhealth.com. And most importantly, please share these stories with anyone in your life who needs to know they're not alone. We're all in this together. Catch you next time.